You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Esoteric Christianity and the Mission of Christian Rosenkreuz. This is the 10th lecture. It's the second one given in Munich on the 20th of November, 1911, and it is entitled The Christ Impulse as Living Reality. So mighty and all-pervading was the impulse poured into the evolution of mankind by the Christ, that its waves surge onward into future epochs. In the fourth epoch of post-Atlantean civilization, this impulse was manifested in the incarnation of Christ in a human physical body. And we are now approaching an epoch when the impulse will manifest in such a way that human beings behold the Christ on the astral plane in an etheric form. Yesterday we heard of human beings who in still later epochs will be able to behold him in even higher forms in the aesthetic and moral spheres. But when we speak in this way of the Christ impulse, we are concerned with ideas which will be resolutely opposed, above all by the churches of Christendom. Great and incisive measures have been and are necessary in the onward progress of human evolution in order to promote increasing understanding of the Christ impulse. Hitherto, indeed, such understanding has been lacking, and anyone who considers modern theology will realize not only the futility of the attitude maintained by opponents of Christianity, but also by those who claim to be its steadfast adherents. The theosophical movement in the West should have become that stream of spiritual life which draws on true and genuine sources to awaken understanding for Christianity in the modern age. But such endeavors met with strong opposition. It is important to understand the real sources of Christianity, but owing to lack of time, they cannot all be mentioned today. We shall speak only of those which have been accessible to mankind since the 13th century. Since the 13th century, the movement connected with the name of Christian Rosenkreuz has been an integral part of the spiritual life of mankind. Spiritual measures of a very definite kind were necessary in the 13th century to enable the influence connected with this name to become part of the spiritual life of the modern age. At the time when the spiritual world was entirely shut off from human vision, a council of 12 wise men came together. All the spiritual knowledge then existing of the world and its secrets was gathered from their separate different spheres into this council. By means of certain occult processes, the wisdom that had passed over from Atlantis to the holy rishis had been transmitted to 7 of these 12 men. In 4 others lived the wisdom of the sacred mysteries of the Indian, Persian, Egyptian, and Greco-Roman epochs, respectively. And what had, so far, unfolded as characteristic of the 5th post-Atlantean epoch, constituted the wisdom of the 12th. The whole scope of spiritual life was thus accessible to these 12. Now it was known at that time that a certain individuality, who had been a contemporary of the mystery of Golgotha, was to be born again as a child. Meanwhile, through a number of incarnations, this individuality had unfolded a power of deep and fervent piety, devotion, and love. The Council of the 12 Wise Men took this child into their care soon after he was born. Shut off from the outside exoteric world, he came under no influence save theirs. They cared for all his bodily needs and were also his teachers. The manner of the child's development was altogether unique. The profound spirituality he bore within him, as the fruit of many incarnations, came to expression too in his outer bodily form. He was a weak and sickly child, but his body became marvelously transparent. He grew up and developed in such a way that a radiant, shining spirit indwelt a body that had become transparent. Through a profoundly wise form of education, all the wisdom from the ages preceding and during post-Atlantean times, which the 12 wise men were able to impart, rayed into his soul. Through deeper soul forces, not through the intellect, the treasures of all this wisdom united in the soul of this child. He then fell into a strange condition. For a certain period of time he ceased to take nourishment. All external functions of life were as though paralyzed, and the whole of the wisdom received by the child rayed back to the 12. Each of them received back what he had originally given, but now in a different form. And those 12 wise men felt that now, for the first time, the 12 great religions and world conceptions had been united into one interconnected whole. And henceforward, what we call Rosicrucian Christianity lived in these 12 men. The child lived only for a short time longer. In the external world, we give the name Christian Rosenkreutz to this individuality. But it was not until the 14th century that he was known by this name. In the 14th century, he was born again and lived then for more than 100 years. Even when he was not incarnated in the flesh, he worked through his etheric body, always with the purpose of influencing the development of Christianity in its true form as the synthesis of all the great religions and systems of thought in the world. And he has worked on into our time, either as a human being or from his etheric body, inspiring all that was done in the West to establish a synthesis of the great religions. His influence today is increasing all the time. Many a person of whom we do not expect it is a pupil chosen by Christian Rosenkreutz. Nowadays, it is already possible to speak of a sign by means of which Christian Rosenkreutz calls one whom he has chosen. Many people can discover this sign in their life. It may express itself in 1,000 ways, but these different manifestations all lead back to a typical form which may be described as follows. Someone may, for example, be chosen in the following way. A person embarks upon some undertaking, he spares no effort to make it successful, and forges straight toward his goal. While he is ruthlessly making his way in the world, he may be a thorough materialist, he suddenly hears a voice saying, quote, "Stop what you propose to do," close quote. And he will be aware that this was no physical voice. But now suppose that he refrains from pursuing his project. Then he will be able to realize that if he had continued ruthlessly toward his goal, this would certainly have led to his death. These are the two essential aspects. Firstly, that he knows with certainty that the warning came from the spiritual world. And secondly, that he knows death would have come to him had he persisted in his undertaking. One who is to become a pupil is shown that he has been saved, moreover, by a warning proceeding from a world which, to begin with, he dwells outside of. So far as earthly circumstances are concerned, death has already come to him, and his further life is to be regarded as a gift. And when the person in question realizes that he will be led to the resolve to work in a spiritual movement, if the resolve is taken, this means that he has been chosen. This is how Christian Rosenkreutz begins to gather his pupils around him, and many human beings, if they were sufficiently alert, would be conscious of such an event in their life. The human beings of whom it can be said that they were or will be united in this way with Christian Rosenkreutz are those who should be the pioneers of a deeper understanding of esoteric Christianity. This stream of spiritual life connected with Christian Rosenkreutz provides the highest means for enabling the Christ impulse to be understood in our time. The beginning was already made long ago. 100 years before the mystery of Golgotha, through Jeshu ben Pandira, whose essential mission it was to make preparation for the coming of Christ. He had a pupil, Matthew, whose name subsequently passed over to his successor, living at the time of Jesus of Nazareth. The greatest deed accomplished by Jeshu ben Pandira was to originate and prepare the gospel according to St. Matthew. The content of this gospel derives from a ritual of initiation, and passages such as that concerning the temptation, and others too, originate from the ancient mysteries. All these processes in the evolution of humanity were to be enacted on the physical plane too. This was written down in outline by the pupil of Jeshu ben Pandira. Jeshu ben Pandira was not spared from the hard fate he himself predicted. He was stoned, and his corpse was suspended from a cross. The original chronicle was preserved in the hands of a few of his adherents in deep secrecy. We can best follow what happened to it later on, when the great church father Jerome himself says that he had received the document of the Matthew Gospel from a Christian sect. The original record was held at that time in the secret keeping of a small circle, and through certain circumstances came into the hands of Jerome. He was charged by his bishop with the task of translating it. Jerome himself narrates this, but he says at the same time that because of the form and manner of the transcription, it should not pass into outside hands. He wanted to translate it in such a way that its secrets would remain secret, and he says furthermore that he himself does not understand it. The nature of what thus came into existence was such that one person could express it in one way and another in a different way in secular language. And this is how it has come down to posterity. In reality, therefore, the world does not yet possess the Gospels in their true form. There is every reason and justification, then, for spiritual research today, in shedding new light upon the Gospels, to go back to the Akashic record, because there and there only are they to be found in their original form. Let there be no mistake about it. Christianity, in its true form, has yet to be separated from the dross. One sign among many others indicates how necessary this is. In the year 1873 in France, a count was taken of true, genuine Catholics. They amounted to one-third. The other two-thirds proved no longer to be adherents in the real sense. And these two-thirds were certainly not people who never feel the need of religion. People's religious longings do incline toward the Christ, but the true sources of Christianity must be rediscovered. And it is to this end that the stream of spiritual life emanating from Jeshu ben Pandira flows into the other stream, which at the beginning of the 13th century is connected with the name of Christian Rosenkreutz. It is also necessary for us to know that one of the characteristics of the incarnations of the Bodhisattva is that in his youth he cannot be recognized as such. Between his 30th and 33rd year, a great revolution takes place, so that this individuality is fundamentally transformed. For example, a Moses or Abraham individuality can take possession of a Bodhisattva individuality at this time of his life. About 3,000 years after our present time, this Bodhisattva will become the Maitreya Buddha, and then his influence will flow from the spiritual world into the hearts of human beings as a magical moral power. In this way, the two streams work together, the stream of the Maitreya Buddha and the Western stream connected with Christian Rosenkreutz. The end of Lecture 10.